Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and John O'Bacon, episode 111 for March 4th, 2010. CMake. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, and open source software. Joining us right now from Ubuntu, the community manager, the author of Art of Community, Mr. John O'Bacon. Hello, John O.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello. Hello.
And the star of our show, Mr. Randall Schwartz from Stonehenge.com. And today, Randall, what? Well, yeah, I guess I can ask. Hello.
I was waiting for you to finish introducing me, because usually you list like the 17 hats that I wear.
He wears 17 hats of all kinds. He's also the author of Learning Perl, many other great Perl books.
Bunch
and
of Perl books.
A Perl and Seaside programmer who is in great demand. So if you've got a job for him, quickly.
Although it's funny, I did an interview yesterday with a potential client in the Bay Area, and he asked me a question about how to do a text processing problem, but he didn't know Perl. He was on the development side of this one company, and they don't deal with Perl on that side. They only deal with Perl on the sysadmin and network management side, which is what I'm looking at. And he asked me this question, and I did it in five lines of Perl. And he was like, whoa, that's pretty cool. So it was pretty funny. I was going, well, you gave me an easy pitch. If you gave me a text processing problem, it's like, I can do it in Perl. There we go. It's done.
It's done.
It was pretty fun. Yeah, it's pretty easy that way. Who do we have today? We have, and I've talked about him a few times in the past shows, we have Bill Hoffman, who is one of the lead engineers on the CMake project, actually on a lot of related projects related to CMake. But CMake, I became interested in a while back because I was installing stuff on my Mac, and for one of the installations, it says, well, the first thing we got to do is put CMake on it. I went, what is CMake? Is it just come after AMake and BMake or what? I mean, what's different about it? Come on, I got to put one bad pun in the opening. There we go. So, but CMake, from what I understand, is a super duper make in that it understands more things about how to build stuff than standard make files do. And I think it's even also cross platform, so I can use it on Windows and all those other scary places where make files don't work so well without having to pull in some of the SIGWIN tools or whatever. So, I'm going to have him on to talk about CMake and everything related to that.
Fantabulous. Anything else you want to talk about before I ring him up?
Thanks everyone for listening, and keep telling your friends if you're listening, because I like the fact I'm getting lots and lots of good mail. And by the way, I'm getting behind with all the marketing work I've been having to do recently to try to find a job so I don't get homeless next month. I've been falling a little bit behind in processing my Floss Weekly mail. So please be patient. We're trying to get everybody slotted in, trying to get everything done. So just bear with me.
Everybody's worried about you. You're tweeting. It sounds like your finances are collapsing. Is the economy just really hitting you?
It's just out of work a bunch last year, and I'm carrying the debt from that, and that means I got to service the debt, and servicing the debt is just costing.
Folks, put in a plug for this guy. I mean, he's really one of the most accomplished Perl programmers in the world. His work with Squeak is legendary in Seaside. If you've got a challenge, a programming task, if you're looking for some contract work, this is the guy. I know you're not looking for a full-time job, but
I'm looking for, and it's part of the problem too, is I still have to run Stonehenge, or else Stonehenge goes away. So I have to also, and that would be even more loss. So I have to, it's a delicate balance. I'll make it. I'm confident now that something will be coming up soon, but I just don't quite know what it is yet. And
send me a note saying, please pay Randall. Give him some money, for crying out loud. I know you don't have any commercials in the show, but would you just please give him some money?
I'm not looking for charity, really.
Randall. They care deeply.
I know. Yeah. Thank you all for caring. I appreciate that, too. Thank you.
Guess who's look who's here. Bill Hoffman. Amazing. We say his name and he appears. Bill, you are in New Jersey.
No.
Okay.
I'm in upstate New York.
Upstate New York. Albany. Okay, there you go.
There is a Clifton Park, New Jersey, but I'm not in it.
Of all the Clifton Parks, that's not the right one.
All the Clifton Parks in all the world, you had to come into mine.
All two of them, you know. The 50-50 chance.
Good. Well, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you on.
Yeah, thanks. Looking forward to it.
So, Randall, why don't you kick it off? Because I'm not going to be much help to you on this show.
Okay, good. You were a great help last time.
I've never made a make in my life.
Yes, so I did a horrible job describing CMake in the opening. Just went all over the place. So I want to hear it from you. So just, you know, give us the 30,000-foot view. What's CMake?
Okay. CMake is a cross-platform build tool. And what that does is create build files that work cross-platform. So you can build on Windows, Mac, Linux, all the popular platforms, and even a lot of the unpopular platforms with one input file. So traditionally, a lot of open source projects, you might see that they would have an autocompile for building on Unix, Linux, and then maybe some Visual Studio projects, three or four different versions of them lying around in some directory. And then the users have to maintain that, and it becomes very difficult. So CMake was created to get over that problem and to provide a single input that the developers could use to build across all the platforms. And to avoid the forcing users and developers to go to tools they don't like or understand, CMake is actually a meta build tool in that it can generate things like Visual Studio project files or Xcode project files or make files on Unix, and that way I like to say that you can take advantage of the most important resource of a project, which is the developer and his experience and his tool set. So at Kitware, we've got 50 or so developers, and some of them use Linux and the command line, some of them use IDEs on Linux, some of them use Windows and Visual Studio, some of them are using Visual Studio 2005. Some of them are using 2008, some of them are using the new 2010, and they can all work together on projects, and it makes it a lot easier. So that's kind of the high-level view of CMake as far as build tool.
Okay, that's great. That's a, thank you for summarizing that way. Now I can ask some very specific and interesting questions, I hope. Now, back in the day, I mean, I go back to 1977 with Unix, so I started out. And one of the things that happened, I don't know if Make was available then. I think it added with, no, Make was in V6, right? So the thing about Make files in the early days of Unix is that you only had really one platform. So it was really simple. But then there started to be variations in the Unix implementations. There was Ultrix, there was FreeBSD, or 4BSD, and the other things were all slightly different from each other. And I remember we had these Make files that had like, you know, the make file if you're on Ultrix, make file if you're on, you know, standard Unix or whatever. And then as Linux came around, there was like make file if you're on Linux. So it started getting worse and worse. And it sounds like, you know, I know that one solution that happened that sort of fixed some of this was this whole thing you mentioned briefly, the autoconf stuff. But that still really only covers the Unix side of the world. And so CMake actually incorporates even more than that, right?
Correct. It includes Windows, various Windows projects, the Mac. And it's also, I mean, it's not, there's a lot of projects that use CMake strictly on Unix. It's just easier to use. It's a higher level view of the build files. And it, like a make file, you would probably have to go into the gory details of how to tell it to build a shared library. And then if you have to do that for the platform you support. I like to say that if you choose to use CMake in your project, you get to outsource all those gritty details to the CMake team.
So what you've done, is taken all that smarts out of there, all the stuff that I've had to know constructing make files by hand, or even to some degree, like I've spent time staring at autoconf files, all the configuration files for that, and it doesn't make any sense to me. It's really scary even at that level. So are you saying that with CMake, I could learn an even simpler set of tools and it would just work everywhere?
That's the idea, yeah. So to do a shared library, you could do it in one line of CMake code, add library, foo, list out the sources, and then that would be it. You run CMake on that and it would work cross-platform and create the library on the various platforms that we support. Cool. And another thing I'd like to say about CMake that's a little unique to it is we're really involved in quality software process. And we have tools for testing CMake as well. CMake has what we call a dashboard, which is used to test CMake nightly on all the platforms we support. And that happens automatically, and we're running through and we're making sure that we aren't breaking stuff. And that infrastructure is also available to anybody using CMake, the whole testing infrastructure. And we have a web application called C-Dash, which can display the output of these tests.
Now, you might want to describe for our audience, for those that aren't familiar with what a makefile is actually doing for us. And CMake, of course, I guess ultimately generates makefiles on platforms that use that. Why would I need a makefile to build an application?
Okay, well, to build an application, what the developer writes is source code. And our main target languages for CMake would be C and C++. And the developers write their code in their favorite editor, the Emacs, and they create a file, my favorite file, .c or .cxx for C++. And once they create that file, they need to run it through a compiler. And the compiler takes the code, turns it into object code, and eventually into an executable or a shared library that an end user would see. And each time they make a change to that file, they want to make sure that everything's built in the right order. And that's an important thing about CMake, is that it handles all the dependencies as well. It actually scans the code, looking for include files and making sure that everything that it depends on is always up to date.
So I don't have to have tools like make depend then go through all my .h includes in my C code to figure out, oh, this really needs the math library and this needs the socket library. That's all handled by CMake too?
Yeah, it's all handled by CMake. And we even do, if anybody's still using it, which they are in the numeric community, we do Fortran. And we do Fortran 90, which has a really crazy module scheme where the compiler actually generates the include files for you, almost. And then if you want to use them, you just say, use module A. And if A hasn't been compiled, before you say you compile B that uses A, B will fail to compile because it can't find this generated include file. So CMake actually parses all the Fortran and orders the build in the correct way so that things will be there when the compiler needs them. I remember we converted a story someone told me, converted this guy's Fortran code over to CMake, and he turned it over to him. He said, well, what do you do? He goes, well, you type CMake, and then you type make. And the guy said, I only have to type make once? Because he was used to using standard make files, and he would just keep typing make until all those files got generated. And that's how a lot of these people in the bear community work. You know, they got some handcrafted make files, and they say make over and over again. He was really shocked that CMake could do that.
That's pretty remarkable, then. What's the workflow look like? Am I, every time I add a C file, do I have to tell CMake about it and rerun CMake then?
Yeah, well, every time you add a new source file, you would edit what's called a cmakelist.txt file. That's sort of like your make file. Mm-hmm. You would add the new file into that, whatever target, shared library, executable that you wanted. And then you would just run your build tool again. CMake actually hooks itself into the make files, and it would recognize that you've changed the input to CMake, rerun CMake automatically for you, and then have make file regenerated underneath itself, and then build the new file. So you only really have to run CMake once to configure the project. After that, It's pretty natural. You just type make.
That's a little bit like, I think, what make depend sort of does these days or already, which it puts itself into the make file, so it runs itself if it thinks the depends have to be changed, something like that. That's really rather simple then. And so this works with Unix systems that run make files, or it works with Windows. You said, does it also work with Eclipse, you said?
It does.
Okay. And so I could use this for pretty much all my projects then.
You could.
Now, how complex is writing this CMake input? Because that's just another kind of input now, right?
Yeah, it's a pretty simple language, macro-based sort of language. It's kind of hard to describe without showing it, but it's got
is it
simple
in the same way that Automake was purported to be simple as well, which is actually code for horrendously complicated.
We tried to make it a little more simple than that. so you basically the basic data structure is a list, and you set in variables, and you create lists of source files that you want to build, and then add them into built-in targets. Like to create an executable, there's a command called add executable. To create a library, there's add library. And CMake right. also supports, if you have more complicated things that you want to do, custom commands. You can actually have things that code generation. And that's something that we've always had to support. The genesis of CMake was a project with NIH called the Insight Toolkit. And it was a project. There's a data set that NIH collected called the Visible Human. And what they did is they took a person, a postmortem, that donated their body to science, and they froze the body. And well, right after they died, they CT'd it and MR'd it and basically all the PET scan, all the medical modalities they could think of. They collected a whole bunch of data sets, and then they froze the body and actually sliced it as thin as they could, and then took pictures. So it gave them a really good data set, and NIH wanted to move ahead the state of the art in segmenting that data set and automatically processing that. And they decided to create a C++ toolkit called the Insight Toolkit. And the toolkit was to take the state of the art in image processing algorithms for medical imagery and code it in C++ and make an open source toolkit. And this was one of the early projects Kitware had in 1999, 2000. And we were one of the lead engineer teams. And we were tasked with creating a build system. And we looked at our tools, and we looked at the build systems that were around in 1999, 2000, and decided we needed to write another one. I sort of went off topic there, but...
well, you know, the world doesn't have enough build systems. what would you say, if somebody's brand... Like, I'm brand new to CMake. What would you say is the primary attraction to it? Is it ease of use? Is it configurability? What would you say the main thing?
I'd say the main thing is ease of use and testability of the code that you're creating and the fact that CMake is well tested. If you were to look at our dashboard, you could see that we're running on a whole bunch of platforms. And if you need to use one of those platforms, it's pretty much guaranteed to work for you.
What kind of support do you have for targeting an installation? Like, I know that in most make files, they have like an install prefix or something like that. Is there the equivalent in CMake to kind of let it filter all the way through to the make file, or do I need to then specify it when I say make?
You can create install rules inside CMake that would be similar to a normal project. Make install would create it. In addition to that, CMake's actually evolved into a family of tools. There's three main binaries that ship with CMake. There's CMake itself, which is the build tool, and then there's CTest, which drives the tests. And then there's a third one called CPack. And this works sort of like CMake does, and it's sort of a meta packager. So mm-hmm. It can take the install rules that are already in your project from CMake and then run something like Nullsoft installer or create a Debian package or an RPM package directly from your CMake input.
How many different packaging systems does it understand?
We've got the Nullsoft install on Windows. It can create self-extracting tar.gz files.
Can it do OS? Debian, can it do OS 10?
And it can do Mac packages.
Oh, very cool. How about FreeBSD packages? I suppose I could just look at the website and check this out, but I'm asking because I'm talking to you.
Well, if you do everything on the website, we got nothing to say, so it's probably a good idea that you ask some questions.
Right. Okay. Okay, FreeBSD? Did you say that already?
You can go down the list, one by one.
No FreeBSD packages.
Oh, okay.
But it's open source. If you wanted to add one, we'd put it in.
Oh, that'd be cool. How about CPAN installations? Because I know they have to, they're a little weird. You kind of have to patch the CPAN installer.
Never done that.
Okay. Yeah, it's a bit of a bear. So how about, so we know, so it supports C++ dependency scanning, C dependency scanning. How about, and you said you mentioned Fortran 90. How about Java? Is it good for Java?
The Java support's probably fairly weak right now. We just haven't had a big, our customer base at Kitware hasn't had a big demand for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe we have a Java parser in there for doing dependency analysis, but I'd say that's probably a pretty weak spot for us.
Okay. And so now I understand, I think you mentioned this earlier, that KDE switched over to using CMake. What were they using before and what brought them to CMake and how much better is it for them?
Okay, that's actually a pretty good story. They were using AutoTools. And then a guy named Alex Nurendorf contacted me and said he had been using CMake for a while. And he contacted me and said, you know, I think KDE might be interested in using CMake. And I was obviously pretty excited about it. It was a big project. And they have a yearly meeting where they get together called Academy. And Alex wasn't able to go to the Academy where they were deciding on the build system. And they decided on SCANS, which is another build system. And Alex wasn't there, and they picked SCANS. And, you know, Alex sort of sent me an email saying, you know, looks like we lost. They're going SCANS. And I said, well, you know, we tried. And then I think it was maybe 6 months later, he sent me an email saying, hey, Bill, I think we might have another shot, because after 6 months, they still couldn't build KDE with SCANS.
With SCANS, yeah. Not surprising. And no offense to any of the people that are on the SCANS project, but every time I've stared at it, I've just, my head's hurt.
Yeah, I think that's, and one of the, a little sideline there, is one of the things we get beat up on is we created our own language instead of doing something like Python. And I think one of the dangers of using a real language like Python is people will use it and you'll depend on it. And from what I've seen, a lot of SCANS projects tend to have a lot of custom Python code inside mm-hmm. inside the build system. Whereas CMake, all that has to be done by CMake, because you really can't get into the guts of it. I mean, you can script it to some extent, but you know, the creation of a shared library and stuff like that is all handled by the C++, and it has to be shared. But anyways, getting back to KDE, Alex said we had this chance, and of course I pretty much dropped what I was doing and tried to help him. And within a week, we were able to build the core KDE libs on Linux. And I think a couple days later, someone built it on Mac, and they were pretty impressed with that. And then I think within 3 weeks or so, we were building most of KDE with CMake. And that's really how they adopted it. And there were some growing pains, because we had to change quite a bit and add some features, like you mentioned, the install rules and some library versioning things and some more standard Unix installation things that KDE really required, since it was such a popular system. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, we didn't have a lot of that implemented. So they had some versioning issues with CMake, but it really stabilized for them. And I think one of the telling signs was one of the main leaders in the KDE project, had a blog that said, like, CMake sadness. I felt kind of bad, and he wrote this big blog about how he was spending all his time trying to muck around and get things to build, and he couldn't build anything anymore. And I think within 3 months later, he had another blog post that was Kisses for CMake. And he had completely changed, and everything was working great for him, and he was able to, you know, focus much more on his development rather than build and make files. And he actually could understand them and add stuff into the make files himself, as opposed to depending on the latest the AutoTools gurus or the SCANS gurus to do it for him.
Do you have a sense of scope, like how many files are actually getting processed by CMake to make KDE? More than 100.
How many CMake files are in KDE?
Well, okay. I guess that's one question. Yeah, I'll try that first.
Oh, how many? I mean, KDE's like, you know, 3 or 4 huge. Million lines of code.
Right, right. So CMake is successfully at figuring out all the dependencies and all that and creating all the libraries and stuff. Wow.
And it's fast. So when they ran it on the build farms, it beat out the AutoTools builds by quite a wide margin. I think the main reason for that is the lack of use of libtool. Libtool is AutoTools' answer to the shared library problem I was just talking about and how do you build these things. Mm-hmm. And what they essentially did is they created a single shell script that, when run, has all these different platforms and that know-how encoded into one script. Mm-hmm. And the downside of that is there's one script that knows how to do everything. And every time it's run, it has to figure out, all right, I'm on this platform, I got to do this, got to do that, and then filter down and actually do the build. Whereas CMake runs once on the system, looks at the configuration files, figure out what system it's on, mm-hmm. and then generates a static make file that is very fast because it's running the commands as raw as possible.
Now, did you make the same mistake with CMake that they made with make, where you have to actually type a literal tab character?
No, there's no.
Good. Finally. That's one of the most annoying things about make is these tabs. I have to always make sure it's in their file and keep them from getting screwed up. But of course, the make files that get generated by CMake have to be all conform to all those steps. Do you target for standard make, or does it require a GNU make, or does it matter?
We target any make.
Wow.
So standard make.
Nice.
Standard make, we do nmake, we do Wacom make, we do Borland make. There's a new tool from the QT folks at Nokia now, but the trolls created a thing called JOM, which is pretty much a drop-in replacement for nmake on Windows, which is Microsoft's make tool, except that it'll do parallel builds.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll take advantage of multiple cores.
Mm.
So CMake can do JOM make files too, but they're pretty much the same as nmake.
I think also another big project using CMake is Second Life. Were you involved with converting that over to CMake?
To some extent, yeah. We worked with the Second Life folks at Linden Labs over the past year, and we've done a few feature requests for them and helped them with their build system some.
And so CMake's getting smarter and smarter over time, obviously, since you keep coming across things that maybe it doesn't quite do as well as it could.
Yeah, there's always work to be done.
And what's the development team look like for CMake? Is it just you, or you have a lot of people working on it?
There's four people at Kitware that I'd say are CMake developers, maybe 4 to 5
mm-hmm.
that have a pretty good knowledge of the insides of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a growing community of people outside of CMake, outside of Kitware, that are working on the modules directory. So CMake has a set of modules for finding packages.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, you can say find package boost, and then it'll discover where boost is on your system, and you can link it in, and it'll figure out what the include paths and all that stuff has to be for boost. And there's one for QT, and there's one for MPI, and there's a whole bunch of them. And a lot of these things are things that I don't run and I don't have, and it's hard for me to maintain. So we've got quite a few outside maintainers that have access to be able to write into the module directory. Recently, we just switched to Git. So
yeah, I was just going to ask what's your cooperation model there? What do you use for a control system there?
Okay, well, for the past decade or so, we've been using CVS.
Ah.
And just last week, we moved to Git.
Yay.
So we're pretty excited. I'm really excited about the potential of Git with integration with our testing tools.
Okay. Where would that be like?
Whereas right now, we do nightly testing, which basically takes a snapshot of the system at a given time every night and test on all the platforms we have. But what tends to happen is you do a new feature in CMake, say some big new feature, and I want to test it across all these platforms. I have to check it into the CBS head and then watch it percolate through the dashboard, and I could potentially break a whole bunch of systems. We really like the nightly to be pretty solid. I mean, we've got continuous builds that'll, as soon as I check stuff in, they'll check it out and try it. But the nightly is more exhaustive in its testing, and we haven't implemented this yet, but we're really close to getting it working. Is a concept of using Git, so you could have a topic branch where I create some branch where I'm trying some new feature, and then I could go to my web page for CDash and say, I want to try this on Mac, and tell it to try that topic branch on Mac, and it'll go out, find a free Mac computer that's volunteered its time to CDash, and when it gets time, it'll run the build and send it back. And this could be a really good model for something like Gitorious, where you get a pull request from somebody, and then it links back to a test that's actually been run on all the platforms that you care about.
You might want to talk to the Git people, because I think there's something kind of already done like that. It sounds really familiar. I know I've been chatting in the Git channel a lot with people in IRC, so you might be reinventing a really nicely round wheel, but it might already be done for you, so I want to look into that. Maybe I'll put you in touch with the right people there. But wow, now that'd be great too. It's great then that you would have that capability because you've moved to Git. Is the Git repo public? Can I download the Git version of this?
Yes, it's we've got one hosted here, and I believe it's also pushed out to GitHub and GitTorious.
Okay.
Gitware/CMake.
Yeah. Did you put the entire CVS history into Git?
We did. Actually, one of the CMake developers, Brad King, has been using Git for ages and really loves it. And he really is a Git guru. I can't really say enough about how much he knows about Git. It just and he finally convinced us to do the move. And he's exhaustively gone through and kept the history. And I even helped him write some scripts that went back and picked out every branch and tag and did diffs. So it's probably one of the best preserved CVS histories in any Git converted project.
Did you find anything embarrassing in there that you thought, oh, I wish we wouldn't have put that in there now?
I don't think so. The history is what it is. I don't know how many people look at it, but it's all there.
So you talked a little bit about
on code forms.
So you talked a little bit about this continuous integration process. So this is, you talk about the dashboard, and what are some of the other pieces of that? And is all that part of the CMake open source, or is some of that part of your money-making side of your operation?
It's all open source, which is part of our money-making operation.
Okay, how does that
generally
model
make
work?
Money. Open source is how we make money. I mean, the company was started around the visualization toolkit. It's a C++ library for doing visualization work. Obviously, it's called Visualization Toolkit. And we make money by providing consulting based around it. So we work with people to create either commercial applications that aren't open source, but on the open source tools, or we collaborate with them to add stuff into the open source tools. So we do a lot of work with national labs. Like I said, we did some work with NIH. And all those groups are contributing back to CMake. So that, I think I lost what you asked me.
You answered enough question there. That was good. So the stuff you're doing, you're working a lot mostly with the government organization, sounds like. So their work, of course, is automatically public domain as well. So that it's supposed to be a really interesting way to, use my tax dollars to generate more software.
Yeah, we're about 60% government funded and 40% commercial right now.
Cool. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, our basic business model, our most successful projects are ones where we collaborate. So we're big into the collaboration, and the dashboards and the testing stuff really helps us to do that, in that we can, a lot of times, we lurk, like VTK and Paraview, another open source project. A lot of the development is done by our customers at Sandia National Labs, and they develop with us. It sort of puts an interesting dynamic on the customer relationship, because if they break the dashboard, someone from Kitware might call them up and say, hey, what'd you do? And yell at them and say, hey, fix that. Of course, they might turn around and say, you know what? You fix it. But, it's all fun.
Cool. Let's see. I'm trying to look through my list of all the things I wanted to ask you today. So what license is it? I think it's BSD, right?
Yeah, it's BSD.
Okay. When you decided the BSD license, how did you pick that?
I think the company and its founders had a long history with BSD. And mm-hmm. it kind of goes back into the founding of the company, really, was based on VTK, like I said. And that's, I can go into a small segue on that. The five founders of the company, myself included, worked at GE Research and Development. It's mm-hmm. running here in upstate New York. And I worked there for about 10 years. People worked there various lengths of time. And they liked to have authors that worked for them. But they didn't like to pay people to write books. Mm-hmm. So, not myself, but Ken Martin, Will Schroeder, and a guy named Bill Lorentzen, who doesn't work at Kitware, asked for permission to write a book on visualization software and to have sample software that with it that they could then own the copyright on and mm-hmm. open release it as open source. And a lot of the work we did at the lab was open source, and I did a lot of BSD stuff. And the problem was we were working at GE, where we did a lot of commercial work. So the GNU license really didn't fit very well with that model. So we tried to stay away from GNU source for a lot of our work because we couldn't integrate it into a commercial product, and it was a bit restrictive for us. So we really had a long history of needing software that could be open, where we could have shared communities, but also be able to create closed software right on top of it without a viral license.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So it sounds like it all worked for you. That's great. Cool.
It's been an amazing ride. I mean, we started with five people in 98, actually one person in 98, and we're around 70 people right now.
Wow. Hey, I just got to ask, does the CMake scripting language have both decision and iteration? Is it Turing complete?
It is.
Uh-oh. have you done Towers of Hanoi in it yet?
Yeah, you probably could.
Yeah. but nobody there has. Okay, it's got to go in that list of everybody that's implemented Towers of Hanoi, as long as it has both decision iteration. So somebody will have to add that to the big wiki for that. That'll be cool. is there anything I haven't asked you yet that we haven't covered that you'd like? What kind of people are you looking for to help with this? More people to come up with these modules? Core people to do porting? What do you need? Translation?
Yeah, I think more people to help with the modules. And I mean, if people are looking to volunteer with the project, mm-hmm. I think, you know, the bug tracker always seems to get away from you. mm-hmm. And being able to, if we could get people that could, you know, try bugs, test them, and make sure the bug fix doesn't break anything else. I mean, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff takes a long time. I think mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to the Git helping with that and this testing I was talking about.
Cool.
But if people want to help, we certainly need help with that.
And the skill would be C++, so because it's all in C++, right?
Or if they're just writing the CMake modules, it'd be the CMake language itself.
Oh, so you can write the modules in CMake. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, the fine modules are all written in CMake, which is mm-hmm. a good thing in that, you know, if there is a problem with one of them and it's not working, the project can actually copy it into the project and override what CMake provides if they need to do a bug fix in one of those.
Okay, cool. I really appreciate you coming on today and chatting with us about CMake, and I'm sure it's going to be exposed to a bunch more people now if they hadn't already seen it from KDE and a few other things. I mean, that's how I saw it. I mean, I was installing stuff on my Mac, and all of a sudden, you know, the port system for the Mac ports, said, well, to install this, you got to install CMake. And I went, what the heck is CMake? I'd never heard about it before. So there we go. I really appreciate you taking your time to talk about this.
All right.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Take care. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
John O and I are just sitting there going, you have to be a developer to appreciate this, right?
This is a developer level thing. You know, we mix it up. It's sometimes policy, sometimes high level stuff, sometimes draft.
No, I'm not complaining. I know of great interest to our audience, and John O and I just played a very nice hand of Scrabble while you were doing that.
We did. Yeah.
Not Farmtown?
Yeah, it was excellent. Yeah. Farmville. Get it right there.
I don't play it. I don't know.
Unless Farmtown is like the open source, you know, version of Farmville. Maybe that's it. It's the maybe it's the GPL Farmville. Farm town.
Second farm town.
So I thought that was interesting, the CPAN thing. I guess too difficult to add CPAN support.
It's a little tricky. The CPAN has this its own idea of dependencies and how to be installed. And so it's always at odds with packaging systems, which is why I was hoping that there was a solution over there.
Because dependencies are the biggest, single biggest problem with installing software in Linux or any operating system, but Linux is the one where it's exposed.
Yeah, well, as I've been playing with FreeBSD, I realized that they did a really smart thing. They actually... FreeBSD, the Perl release on it, patches the standard CPAN installer tool so that instead of just blasting the files into the directories where they'd normally be installed, it actually creates on the fly a dynamically generated package and then hands that to the packaging system.
Oh,
and
that's
says,
so
you
smart.
Install this.
Oh.
Which means you can uninstall stuff, which you normally can't do in the Perl. Normally, Perl, once it's one way. It's an installer but not a packager. So that's really smart that they did that. I was actually quite amused. I was actually asking.
Is everything then static, though, as a result?
No. It still works the same way. I mean, the same files ultimately result in there. But when it's installed, that also means that they can track that this particular file came from this particular package.
Right.
So you can uninstall it because you have the table of contents.
Right.
And you can pull stuff back out or upgrade it cleanly without it leaving little droppings around when it gets uninstalled. So I was asking in the FreeBSD IRC channel, which has been very helpful, by the way. I mean, I've had more fun learning about FreeBSD over the last month or two because I'm moving my systems over to that. By the way, Neil's also moved his mail system over to the same host that I'm using, arpnetworks.com. Been very happy with him. Neil's moved his system over there. Some other friends of mine down in the Bay Area or in LA have been moving to ARP Network. So I'm having a great time with that. But it's been great chatting with these guys in the FreeBSD channel because they've been so helpful. And I said, what about the Perl install stuff? And they said, no, actually, that's all magically just works.
Wow.
I went, oh, that's cool. And then I looked and found that, I was installing these things called BSD Pan, which is basically a package, but it has a namespace all of its own. And if you find out later that it's actually a real package for something, it got installed by the CPAN installer, you can actually just replace it across the board. It uninstalls the old one, puts the new one in, and now you're actually tracked with the official packaging system. So very nice stuff. I'm just very happy about that. And I'm liking that that people like Bill are putting together these things like CMake to really sort of, kind of bring it back to the way we used to have it in the old days. We used to have just one Unix and it just worked. And now there's like a zillion different things that all have the ls command and they all kind of work slightly different. And of course, I'm completely ignorant of things like Windows and all those sides of things. And I'm sure they're even weirder trying to build things for. So, just like a few weeks ago.
Well, that's what ends up happening. You put a lot of static libraries or duplicate DLLs and things because it's just you can't figure out the dependencies. So you say, well, I'm just going to throw everything in.
Yeah,
and which is there'll be 80 different copies of a DLL in a Windows install, or Windows set.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, hey, John, you had a bunch of stuff happen in the Ubuntu world today, didn't you?
What's going on in Ubuntu?
Yeah, today's been a busy day, to say the least. Hence me not asking so many questions, mainly because I know nothing about CMake, but also because I'm
never
being...
stops me from asking questions, Jono. You got to get used to the ignorant question. It's what made
so
me
how
what
many
I
CMakes
am.
Can I put into a dog?
That's good. That's it. You got it. Hi, George. He's got it.
How many CMakes can dance on the head of a pin? I mean, really.
So what's been going on?
So today we announced a refreshed branding for Ubuntu. So this is something our design team's been working on. We've been working with the community.
I wore my brown today because I knew you'd be on, and now you're getting away from the brown. Don't tell me.
So it's something I announced today on Planet Ubuntu, and the response has been stunning. I mean, it's been 6 years, since the original Ubuntu logo came out, and it looks, fairly straight. It looks very, very similar, but it's just a bit more refined, a bit more professional looking, I think. So, what we did is our design team's been working on these logos and we got in touch with a bunch of leaders in the community, and we invited a ton of community members into the office in London so they could work with the design team and bash out some designs. But now we could announce it today. So it's been a busy morning of talking to people about
design.
This
is the new logo here with the The little thing. Yeah.
I wish I could see it.
If you can't see? I can make it so you can see.
Well, the problem is that I have no idea. This is a problem with Skype, right? I have no idea how to... I'm currently looking at Randall's text messages here. I have no idea to actually switch, go back to the video view in Skype. It's really complicated. What do I click on?
I could type an ASCII view of it.
It's Skype, it's Windows.
Turn it into ASCII.
So I'm looking at... I guess this is brainstorming the different Ubuntu...
Let me go to the...
So there should be a little window. You should be able to see what I'm putting up on the screen there. Do you see it now?
I don't see anything. Oh. All right, hang on a second. I'm going to the, live Twit view just because Skype is
bloody
difficult.
So you'll see what I'm showing in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I'll just leave
Isn't
it on
technology
here.
Wonderful? Technology's great. All right. Although it does make this conversation possible in general. So
I like this.
All right.
These are the samples. These are the samples at the below, right. But this is the
new
one.
So this is what you're seeing on the Fridge website is these are final designs that we've been working on. So like the Ubuntu QA, the Brainstorm, the Ubuntu forums, you know, these things, these are the, what we've been working with the community on. That's the final Ubuntu logo.
At the top. Okay.
Yeah. So, and then there's things like Zubuntu, you know, the different derivatives.
I like the Zubuntu logo with a little rat.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
We invited, you know, people from Kubuntu, Zubuntu, Mythbuntu, Edubuntu to come and work with the design team. And, the response has just been really, really, really phenomenal. People seem to be really happy with it. But, you know, it's always, you know, branding always generates an emotional response in people. You know, so...
Well, especially really something you get attached to. So, yeah, it is good that the people are saying, hey, this is great.
People have got, you know, Ubuntu tattoos. And
right.
One guy has this Circle of Friends shaved into his head. So, and we've got a couple of new themes as well, which are
looks nice. Looking, good.
Again?
But no Circle of Naked People anymore, right?
Oh, that's long gone.
That was a long time ago.
We don't talk about that anymore, Randall.
Sorry. Yes, right. She'll never speak again. I'm sorry. All right.
Inappropriate Randall again.
What are we going to do with it?
Just par for the course.
So who's coming up on future episodes? You got some?
No, we have already committed booked. I've got a lot of people right on the short list trying to get him on, but committed booked. We're speaking to Carlos Puchol next week. He's talking to us about the Amahi system, which is a home server firewall media center sort of thing that you can run on generic boxes to do all sorts of cool stuff for your home system. Following that, we've got Matt Ray. He's going to talk to us about Zenos. Sorry, I keep getting it wrong. Zenos. Long
Princess E. Warrior?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Wow.
Zenos is a... I'm not going to remember what it really is again. It's a monitoring platform. It's to make sure that your boxes are up and running, make sure your networks are all working correctly, and all the data gets recorded and stuff. A very large platform around that. It's very used by some very big customers. So we'll be happy to talk to him about that. And then Doug Smith is coming on talking about the ACM IEEE Cluster Challenge, which is how fast people can eat cluster sandwiches. No, it's clusters of large systems. So how people building how many megaflops and teraflops and you know, kazinoflops and whatever. It's they can generate stuff on challenges there. Also, I am working on a guest. I can't confirm it yet, so I can't quite say it yet. But let's just say the guest deals with stuff that's out of this world. I'm just going to leave that as a goodness,
Tony the Tiger. No.
What does that have to do with
nothing? Nothing. You just got my hopes up for no reason.
That is great.
Great.
Not even close. And for those watching on the live stream, you're on. You're doing Ignite tonight, aren't you?
I am. I mean, it's a little late because it's sold out at the Hop Monk Tavern in Sebastopol. But if you're already there, I'll be the first speaker at 7:22, and for 5 minutes, and then it's over. 7:22 to 7:27, and then I'll be done and then gone.
So were you inspired by my presentation a few months ago?
Sarah Wing over at O'Reilly, and I guess Ignite comes from O'Reilly, and this is Global Ignite Week. There are Ignite presentations in 60 countries, in all 7 continents if Antarctica comes through, which I think it's going to, March 1st through 5th. So I thought, and then I remember you doing it. So when Sarah approached me and said, would you like to do one in Sebastopol, which is in my neighborhood, I said, yes, because of you, actually. I thought,
thank you.
Yeah, Randall really enjoyed doing it. I deeply regret saying yes because it, as it turns out, it is orders of magnitude harder to do a 5-minute speech than a 5 hour speech.
Yeah, and I saw that when I was putting this together. It just was a lot of work trying to figure out how little I could say and still get the story across.
You get two sentences a slide. You get 20 slides. Mm-hmm. And I bitterly and deeply regret the subject I chose. And please don't watch. It'll be online, igniteshow.com. Is their new site. They're going to put all the videos. I think probably yours will be up there, too. All the as many of the videos that they have of past Ignites as well. That's
have
a great
the,
idea.
The Leo stands for that started queuing up already to get in.
Oh, God, it sold out. The minute my name was attached to it.
Happens all the time. Yeah,
it was, you can't get in there. We had to hire a whole security team. But it's okay. It's okay.
It's difficult when life gets like that, eh?
It's very cool.
You know, me and Ringo Starr, basically. You know, it's been tough for both of us.
You are the original gangster, that's why.
No, I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. But just for people who don't know, Randall talked about it. He did his karaoke for Fun and Profit presentation.
Yeah, exactly.
You get 20 slides, 15 seconds. They auto-advance. So that's it. And you know, never the twain shall meet. If you get off track, the slides keep going.
Yeah, that was the hard part. It's like it just keeps. You
it's
know,
relentless.
I had to figure out how to actually have slight bits of optional things that I might want to talk about to kind of keep talking as it's. As
I've been
just,
doing
it's
that
tricky.
As well.
It's a lot trickier than it looks. It really, is a lot trickier than it looks.
And then I actually I put a bunch of basically dummy slides that have no content at all, just kind of random images on them. Mm. That way, I can say anything I want.
That way you can riff.
They make no sense. They're just people notice that. I did a little run through here on Twit Live, and people said, "What does that mean? I don't. What are you doing? why is?" Well, I'll give you an example. Here's one. This is the thinker, and an old time radio. That's it.
Connect those two.
I can say anything I want.
I think it's radio.
Here's another one. Just a bunch of heads with circles drawn around them. So I just stuck those in. They don't actually mean anything.
That's one way to get ahead.
I could say that. I could say anything. Or I could just kind of look at it and say, well, I think you'll see it's obvious.
Yeah.
It's, my meaning here is clear.
Actually, you know, in the Ignite presentations I saw in Portland on the one I did a few months ago, I saw a lot of people that had that kind of a strategy where there was simply
junk.
A lot of generic slides and they were just sort of working their way through it so they could tell their story, whatever they want to do. So, I think you're probably on track here with this. I think it'll work really
and then
well.
I have slides with about 40 seconds worth of text on them. So I don't know.
Way too many words. Look at that. Oh, that's just
I don't know what I'm going to do.
You could start reading it until it goes away.
But I tell you what, if you've ever wondered who this guy is and what he has to do with the world of advertising, you're going to want to come to my talk tonight.
Yep.
That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. There's some guy, for those of you listening, with a big beard and light bulbs. And it'll all make sense as soon as... Here's another good one. This, you'll like this, Jono. That's bacon and eggs. Oh, you can't see it. You can't see it.
Let me switch the leading live feed on because Skype has outfoxed me.
This is the world famous bacon and egg slide from every Ignite presentation has to have. Is that not true, Randall? Every Ignite presentation has to have.
I think I saw that three or four times.
Yeah,
in
bacon and eggs in a slide.
Oh, that's right. I see it. Yep, I see it.
Yeah,
that's actually one of my relatives,
right there.
Yeah, he's got egg in his face.
You know what? I won't be using this text, but if I get lost, I will use a text. It's just like breakfast. You know, the difference between involvement and commitment is just like breakfast. At breakfast, the chicken is involved, the pig is committed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you show that slide, and people think about that. That's 15 seconds shot right there.
That's very insightful, actually.
I should have used that.
That should have been your whole presentation, talking about commitment.
Commitment. Watch this slide. I'll just repeat it over and over again, every 15 seconds.
Speaking of commitment, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N. And I do occasionally do live streaming. In fact, I'm doing karaoke tonight. So if you want to watch me do karaoke, follow my live stream and you'll see where it comes up.
Can we see your karaoke for Fun and Profit presentation online? Is it on?
There's actually the version both in Salem and Portland are both online. I think the Portland one's linked from igniteportland.com. And the Salem one, I put up myself. It's on my YouTube channel. I think it's on there.
There's also a youtube.com/ignite with a lot of...
Yeah, let me see if it's on my youtube.com/Merlin. I think I am over there.
Do you get a diverse clientele watching the online karaoke sessions?
In fact, I do. I've had people on five continents. Come on, why? Not at the same time. But
what he's asking is, do women ever show up?
They claim to be women.
I'm just curious as to what kind of people watch karaoke on the internet.
You stream karaoke.
Oh, I'm not Merlin on YouTube. I'm real Merlin. And I'm just going, where's all my videos? They're not there.
I would like to, next time we're together.
There it is.
Which will probably be a cruise in next January or February. But would you teach me how to do karaoke?
Oh, there's nothing to learn, Leo. You're just singing to a mic.
I'd love to learn.
If you go to youtube.com/realmerlin, I karaoke for fun and profit. That's the one from Salem. So I have that up there.
Good.
Yep. So there we go. In fact, a sample of my karaoke is also there. I sing Rocky Mountain High. And there's a little video of that.
Can you hit that high note? Rocky Mountain High.
Right. I have to be standing up and I have to be appropriately lubricated. But yes, I can hit it.
Colorado.
Step away from the comment.
Yeah. Exactly, Jono. I was thinking the same thing.
Jono, anything else you want to plug before we go?
Not really. I like M&Ms. Go and eat M&Ms.
Thank you.
Okay, great.
And you're not talking Marshall Mathers. You're talking the other kind, the chocolate.
But tish. Everything's good. You know, use Ubuntu. It's the way forward. Read The Art of Community. You'll be my friend.
Book is The Art of Community. It is in every bookstore everywhere and, of course, online at Amazon.com.
It's in good bookshops. If you don't want to be my friend, read another book and use Windows.
You can be his friend.
Sales of Windows fly up now.
Oh, look. We can hurt Jono. You can be his friend just by following him on Twitter, twitter.com/JONOBACON.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Merlin is MERLYN on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you guys for being here. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
On Floss Weekly.